You're listening to According to Sam, episode 148. Welcome to According to Sam, folks. This is episode 148. And we have located more classified documents in Joe Biden's Delaware home over the last week. If you had an opportunity to listen to my last podcast, we talked about these classified documents that were first found at Joe Biden's think tank, the Penn Biden Center in Washington, D.C. These documents, this was the first discovery of the Biden documents. They were discovered a week before the November election, and we found out about them last week. And after they told us about these documents that were found at this office in Washington, D.C. back in November, we learned that more documents were found at Joe Biden's house. The Biden's lawyers were doing this search, both at his office in Washington, D.C., and then his lawyers went to his house and found more documents in his garage, and then they found more documents in another place. And in the last 48 hours, just 72 hours, this past weekend, we learned that more documents were found, classified documents were found at Joe Biden's residence. But not only that, this morning, we're learning that classified documents were found at Mike Pence's home in Indiana. If you haven't heard about this, you will. The news just broke this morning, but classified documents were found at Mike Pence's residence in Indiana again. Take a listen to this clip.
Exclusive CNN reporting just into us, a source revealing, get this, another discovery of classified documents. Roughly a dozen government documents were uncovered at the home of former Vice President Mike Pence. That home is in Indiana. The search took place last week. The documents were found by one of the former vice president's lawyers. The FBI was immediately notified. This find, of course, flies in the face of repeated Pence denials that he held on to any classified materials when he left the government. The backdrop, too, well, you all know this, two separate special counsels already investigating the current and the former president, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, for potential breaches as well and how they handled government secrets.
So this is timely. This is very interesting that Mike Pence would just decide to get his lawyers. I mean, again, very similar to what was going on with Joe Biden. His lawyers, just decide one day, a week before the election, that we're going to go through this office and just check. We're just going to go on a search. They just decided out of the blue, the president's lawyers, to just go on a search of this office in Washington, D.C., and then after finding these documents, just decide that we're going to go on a search of the president's house, the president's lawyers. So this is Mike Pence's lawyers, and the CNN reporter says it here, just out of an abundance of caution. Take a listen to this.
So, more documents. This is now number three, former Vice President Mike Pence. Out of an abundance of caution, we are told he had a lawyer go through his house and double check boxes.
That does not sound plausible to me, that out of an abundance of caution that Mike Pence just all of a sudden, as this is blowing up with the Biden documents, and we're discovering more documents at Biden's house, and Biden's in hot water, that out of an abundance of caution, Mike Pence, who has said over and over again that he never took any documents away from an unsecure place. Let's listen to Mike Pence say that.
Let me ask you, as we sit here in your home office in Indiana, did you take any classified documents with you from the White House?
I did not.
Do you see any reason for anyone to take classified documents with them leaving the White House?
Well, there'd be no reason to have classified documents, particularly if they were in an unprotected area.
So Mike Pence says that he didn't take any classified documents, and there would be no reason for anyone to take any classified documents. But they just found classified documents in his house. And he found them a week ago. We're just finding out about them today. And he wanted to go and look for them, as the CNN woman said, just out of an abundance of caution. Out of an abundance of caution, we're finding all of these documents in Joe Biden's office in Washington, D.C., and at his residence in Delaware. I've been saying over and over again that I didn't take any classified documents, but let me go see if I took some classified documents. I mean, why would you send your lawyers on a search of your residence for classified documents? People were asking you, Mike Pence, if you took any classified documents. You said no. Why would, just out of an abundance of caution, when you've been answering this question no, that you didn't take any classified documents, and why would anybody take any classified documents, but just out of an abundance of caution, I'm going to send my lawyers to go take a look. That makes sense to you? It makes sense to you that Joe Biden just sent his lawyers to go rummage through his things, rummage through his home, and, oh, we just found classified documents. In both of these cases, they're very different than the case with Donald Trump. In Joe Biden's case, he sends his lawyers to just go and look, I guess, out of abundance of caution, just like Mike Pence. Mike Pence sent his lawyers to go and look, and they find documents, and they're surprised by these documents. Oh my God, I'm so surprised that we found these documents in my Penn Biden Center and at my home, in my garage. Oh, I'm so surprised. Mike Pence, I'm so surprised. I'm surprised that we found these documents in my house when I sent my lawyers to go take a look. Trump wasn't surprised by any of the documents. Again, Trump was in dispute with the archives over these documents. Trump claimed that he had declassified these documents and these documents belonged to him. And he was in a dispute. They had issued subpoenas for this material. They came down to Mar-a-Lago, the archives, and they reviewed a bunch of documents. They told him to put a better lock on the door, and he put a better lock on the door. The only reason they raided his place is because there's a whistleblower who told them, who told the Justice Department that, hey, the documents that you went through in Trump's closet at his Mar-a-Lago residence, those documents, those aren't all the documents. Trump has more documents that he hid from you. And you don't know about those documents. Some whistleblower, who we don't know who the whistleblower is, who told that to the Justice Department. That's what they told the Justice Department. And the Justice Department went in, the FBI went in and raided Trump's residence. They're keeping the identity of this whistleblower hidden from Trump. That's another reason Trump's never going to be indicted. Because if Trump's indicted, then he's going to find out who this whistleblower is. And we're all going to find out who the whistleblower is. These are very different circumstances. Trump was in dispute. Trump had been subpoenaed. Trump wasn't surprised by any of the documents. None of those documents caught him by surprise. He didn't say, no, I didn't take any classified documents. That wasn't his story. His story was that I declassified them. They belonged to me. Joe Biden And Mike Pence, they're surprised. They sent their lawyers to go take a look through all their things and just happened to find classified documents. Doesn't make sense to me that they would just send their lawyers to go look. I mean, do the Obamas, do the Clintons, I mean, do the Bushes, do they have classified documents in their residence? I mean, I would think out of an abundance of caution, they should all go take a look right now. And if they do, they should immediately to do the right thing. If they do have any classified documents in their residence, Obama, Bill Clinton, George Bush, then they need to let us know. They need to call the Justice Department right away. Everybody needs to do a search of their residence right now out of an abundance of caution. Now, I don't know what's going on here. I don't have any theories yet, but it just seems strange to me. And the timing is so, I mean, Mike Pence just out of the blue went, Joe Biden's in hot water and we're finding all these documents in his residence. He just tells his lawyers to go and take a look. This is what Mike Pence said just a couple of weeks ago when all of this information was coming out on Joe Biden. Mike Pence was asked about it.
We sat down with former Vice President Mike Pence. Top of mind for him was another former vice president, President Joe Biden, and his handling of documents marked as classified following the CBS News report earlier this week.
Do you approve of how the Justice Department has handled this matter so far?
No, I don't approve how the Justice Department has handled this matter, and I don't approve how they handled the matter of classified documents found at Mar-a-Lago.
Former Vice President Mike Pence offered sharp criticism of the Justice Department, where a special counsel is now probing how his former boss, former President Donald Trump, handled records marked as classified.
The kind of double standard that we see being practiced by the Biden administration in the wake of this incident in the Justice Department, I think is exactly what undermines public confidence in our justice system.
Biden's lawyer and the White House have said the president's team dealt swiftly with the discovered records. But Republicans like Penn say the current review of the materials by a U.S. attorney might not be enough.
Would you like to see a special counsel or not for the Biden papers?
I think the Biden papers should be dealt with precisely the same way that President Trump's papers have been dealt with and examined.
Well,
with
now we have the Pence papers. We have the Trump papers, we have the Biden papers, and we have the Pence papers. And be careful what you wish for, Mike Pence, because perhaps there needs to be a special counsel into you now. And for clarification, I said that I didn't say, but Biden's lawyers first searched his think tank, the Penn Biden Center. They're the ones who discovered those first documents. Then Biden's lawyers started going through his residence. These last set of documents that were just discovered at Biden's residence over the weekend, they were discovered by the FBI. So Joe Biden, after his lawyers found all of these documents at his office, his think tank office in D.C. and in his garage and places, then Joe Biden invited the FBI. They didn't raid like they did Trump. Joe Biden invited the FBI in to come and rummage through his things. And the FBI are the ones who found these most recent documents. So that's what we need to do. We need Mike Pence now to invite the FBI into his place now that his lawyers have discovered these initial 12 documents, classified documents. Now, the thing for Mike Pence to do is to open up his house to the FBI. And I think that the Obamas, I think that the Clintons, I think that George Bush, everybody, the FBI needs to come into everybody's house and go through their things. That's the only way that this is going to be fair. This is the only way this is going to be on the up and up. Now, they set the standard by raiding Trump. The FBI went in and raided him. And then now Joe Biden has invited the FBI to come into his house. So I think that that sets the standard that everybody needs to let the FBI in. And if they don't let you in, FBI, you need to raid like you did Trump. That's the only way. Because you can't tell me that Mike Pence is the only one who has classified documents in his place. And Joe Biden. You can't tell me that George Bush and Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, from her time as Secretary of State, I mean, when she was under FBI investigation for her mishandling of classified documents right before the 2016 election, did the FBI go through her things? You know the answer to that question. That question, the answer to that question is hell no. They didn't even put her on oath when they went to Chappaqua and interviewed her for that investigation. They didn't even put her under oath. No, they didn't go through her things. They need to go through her things, her and Bill's things. They need to find out they have classified documents there. And the Obamas, their house, and Martha's Vineyard. The FBI, you need to let the FBI in. That's the thing to do. I mean, this story is so crazy. I've been playing with this pen. You probably have heard it clicking. I'm stopping. I'm not going to play with this pen anymore. But that's what that sound is, if you've heard it. Put the pen down. But this story is so crazy. It's so crazy that everybody is turning up with classified documents now after they send their lawyers to search. I think it would be only fitting to bring the FBI into Obama's residence and the Clinton's residence and the Bush's residence and maybe even Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff, some of these other guys. Do you have any intelligence, any classified information in your residence? And this is so ridiculous. But again, I really don't care about that story. I don't care about Biden's classified documents. Donald Trump is never going to be indicted. I do care about the sloppiness. I mean, what's going on with all of our secrets just, you know, in random people's homes all over America? Who knows where they are abroad, our secrets? I mean, is this the type of security that we're dealing with in the 21st century in 2023? I am concerned with that. But again, going back to my last podcast, particularly on Joe Biden, there's a lot more to hang Joe Biden on than these classified documents. On Wednesday, the day after my last podcast, Tucker Carlson did this, his opening monologue, and it was so on point, and I believe that it fit in so well with the podcast that I had done the day before on last Tuesday. And this is Tucker Carlson's Wednesday show. And he's talking about these classified documents and he's saying the exact same things that I said in my podcast. The fact that Joe Biden is guilty of, well, he mentioned the border specifically, that if Joe Biden's going to be in trouble, he should be in trouble. The fact that he's mishandled the border and it's an absolute mess. Not these classified documents. These classified documents are small potatoes compared to Joe Biden's record on the border. In my podcast, I said Joe Biden's selling of access to his office through his brother and son as vice president, that's more egregious than these classified documents. If we're going to impeach Joe Biden on anything, we need to impeach him on his activities as the big guy and selling influence through his son and looking into that. And Tucker and I basically were saying that the same thing using two different issues, he using the border, me using the big guy, and Biden selling his influence. And there's probably a lot of other things that are more egregious than these classified documents. I don't care about these classified documents. But I also alluded to in the last podcast that this was a setup, and this was a setup by the intelligence community. It was Hank Johnson, Democrat of Georgia's Hank Johnson, the guy who thinks if too many people are on the island of Guam that the island will tip over. Hank Johnson, he's the one who started this conspiracy theory, saying that these classified documents could have been planted in places, and he was suspicious of the timing. It was his conspiracy theory, and I took his conspiracy theory a little bit further and said that if this is true that these documents were planted, as Hank Johnson alluded to, then who did this? Was it the Russians? Was it Trump and the Republicans? Who did this? And I made the case that it was the intelligence community attempting to take down a president as they had taken down many other presidents. And then on this next night, when Tucker is doing his opening monologue, he starts talking about the CIA taking down Richard Nixon and how they took down Richard Nixon. He starts talking about Gerald Ford and how Gerald Ford was part of the Warren Commission. If you listen to my podcast, how often do I talk about Gerald Ford being a member of the Warren Commission and that he did the Halloween massacre the night that he fired William Kobe, the head of the CIA, and he fired him because he had cooperated with the church committee hearings. And after the CIA had taken out Richard Nixon, then they brought in Ford, who sat on the Warren Commission, and he fired Kobe in one night and made George Bush the director of Central Intelligence. He also fired his chief of staff and the head of the Defense Department and brought in Dick Cheney and made Rumsfeld chief of staff. His vice president was Rockefeller. Yes, man. And then Tucker was tying this all together. I was getting excited because he was talking about all the things that I was talking about. And I just thought that it was interesting. I want you to listen to a little bit of this opening monologue that Tucker Carlson did last Wednesday night.
Joe Biden deserves to be driven from office and disgraced. But for this, breaking federal classification rules, some of the stupidest and most dishonest laws Congress has ever passed. It's like arresting El Chapo for expired plates. It's missing the point. But it looks like that's what's going to happen. It seems like every day one of Biden's lawyers shows up with more sheaves of classified documents, like a dog who's found another dead chipmunk under the house. This bunch was in his office at Penn, the one paid for by the Communist Party of China. These were found next to his sad little midlife crisis sports car in a garage in Delaware, and so on. You keep waiting for the White House physician to announce another document trove has been discovered after a routine colonoscopy. It could happen, because at this point you know exactly where this story is heading. Permanent Washington does not want Joe Biden to run for president again. This is how they're sending that message. Even CNN has decided to become interested in Joe Biden's misdeeds 2 years into his presidency. They're doing segments on how classification laws protect this country from its mortal enemies like Russia. So you know for certain the order has gone out. Biden is done. What a missed opportunity this is. If you're looking for crimes that Joe Biden has committed, there is a very long list. Our country is being invaded. The world is on the brink of nuclear war. American cities have become slums. Our economy is in shambles. Even our airplanes no longer take off on time.
That's exactly the point that I was making last week, that these classified documents are, and Tucker Carlson says it here, he says they're a parking ticket compared to the crimes that Joe Biden is guilty of. He mentions the border. Like I said, the dealings with his son, selling access to his office, is another. You know, there are probably a number of other crimes that Joe Biden is guilty of that would take down his presidency, that it shouldn't be something as minor as these parking tickets.
If you're looking for crimes that Joe Biden has committed, there is a very long list. Our country is being invaded. The world is on the brink of nuclear war. American cities have become slums. Our economy is in shambles. Even our airplanes no longer take off on time. It's a disaster, and Joe Biden and his staff have a hand in all of it.
All of it.
In a country with a functioning government, Joe Biden would have been impeached before the first million illegal aliens crossed over our southern border. But no one did anything to stop it. So now they're arriving at the rate of a quarter million a month. So that, writ large, is the biggest story of our lifetimes. It is the one thing Joe Biden has done that cannot be undone. Our great-grandchildren are going to live with the consequences of this. But you never know it from watching most of the news. There is an effective media blackout on Joe Biden's immigration policies and on their downstream effects on America. There are too many strangers pouring in at once, and as a result, the country is becoming chaotic. Because Joe Biden has ignored immigration laws passed by the Congress. That is a crime. And it has killed huge numbers of Americans, hundreds of thousands dead from narcotics.
Fentanyl has changed the entire game here in San Francisco. You can't buy heroin out here anymore. Nobody sells heroin and nobody uses heroin. Everybody has transitioned over to fentanyl.
The fentanyl is the most dangerous drug to ever hit the streets of the United States in history.
Fentanyl has killed more than 70,000 Americans in 12 months. Here in San Francisco, it's the dominant drug. It's responsible for three quarters of drug overdoses, brazen drug dealing, and rampant drug use. In the shadow of City Hall, the same City Hall residents say actively enabled the fentanyl crisis.
All of it, every gram, came over an open border. So what's notable as a political matter is that every one of these disasters, the fentanyl epidemic, the chaos and crime in our cities, the invasion underway through Texas, Arizona, and California, all of those deeply concern Americans. We're not guessing at that. Polls show it very clearly. By contrast, how many voters do you think are lying awake right now worrying that public officials might violate some obscure federal classification law? None. Not a single person. No one outside Washington cares or even understands the issue. And yet, it is classified documents, not our open borders, that the Justice Department is punishing Joe Biden for. Why is that? What's going on here? Well, it's simple. Washington is protecting itself. Joe Biden alone is responsible for this crime. He alone took home classified documents. He didn't have help in doing that. But allowing the country to be invaded, that's not something you can do by yourself. So if Biden were to be taken down for opening the southern border, a lot of other people would go with him. He had a lot of accomplices. Permanent Washington doesn't want that. And ultimately, and here's the point, permanent Washington is in charge.
All right. So I want to play what I said last week on my podcast. Just take note of what Tucker Carlson just said. He said that if Joe Biden goes down for these classified documents, he's the only person that goes down. But if we take Joe Biden down for something more egregious, him selling access, something that deals with him making money off Ukraine, something that deals with the open border, like what Tucker is talking about, then it not only takes down Joe Biden, but it takes down the other people around him that are part of his conspiracy, because it's not only Joe Biden. This is what I said last week. You see, Joe Biden is the scapegoat. They would rather Joe Biden be taken down than they all go down. Joe Biden is absolutely in hot water, but the point that I'm going to make, and you're going to see as we go here, is that this is the least of Joe Biden's problems. And if we focus on the other stuff, the stuff that is more important, don't take this bait. Don't take the bait. Focus on the other stuff that is more important, the more egregious stuff that Joe Biden has done. We can not only take down Joe Biden, but the entire apparatus. So let's go back. And again, this is what Tucker Carlson said just the day or a couple of days after I did this podcast.
How many voters do you think are lying awake right now worrying that public officials might violate some obscure federal classification law? None. Not a single person. No one outside Washington cares or even understands the issue. And yet, it is classified documents, not our open borders, that the Justice Department is punishing Joe Biden for. Why is that? What's going on here? Well, it's simple. Washington is protecting itself. Joe Biden alone is responsible for this crime. He alone took home classified documents. He didn't have help in doing that. But allowing the country to be invaded, that's not something you can do by yourself. So if Biden were to be taken down for opening the southern border, a lot of other people would go with him. He had a lot of accomplices. Permanent Washington doesn't want that. And ultimately, and here's the point, permanent Washington is in charge.
Oh, wow. Wow. It's funny, you know, that he and his producers see things very much the way that I see it. I was blown away by that. But that's not the only part of this monologue that had similarities in what I've been telling you and what I've been talking about here on According to Sam. When he gets into this part about Nixon and Gerald Ford, if you've been listening to my podcast, you recognize this stuff clearly. Take a listen.
So if Biden were to be taken down for opening the southern border, a lot of other people would go with him. He had a lot of accomplices. Permanent Washington doesn't want that. And ultimately, and here's the point, permanent Washington is in charge. It's not the democracy you imagine. We're seeing that now. So if you want to understand, if you really want to understand how the American government actually works at the highest levels, and if you want to know why they don't teach history anymore, one thing you should know is that the most popular president in American history was Richard Nixon.
Oh, permanent Washington, deep state, permanent Washington. It's all synonymous.
Taken down for opening the southern border, a lot of other people would go with him. He had a lot of accomplices. Permanent Washington doesn't want that. And ultimately, and here's the point, permanent Washington is in charge. It's not the democracy you imagine. We're seeing that now. So if you want to understand, if you really want to understand how the American government actually works at the highest levels, and if you want to know why they don't teach history anymore, one thing you should know is that the most popular president in American history was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon. Yet somehow, without a single vote being cast by a single American voter, Richard Nixon was kicked out of office and replaced by the only unelected president in American history. So we went from the most popular president to a president nobody voted for. Wait a minute, you may ask. Why didn't I know that? Wasn't Richard Nixon a criminal? Wasn't he despised by all decent people? No, he wasn't. In fact, if any president could claim to be the people's choice, it was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was reelected in 1972 by the largest margin of the popular vote ever recorded before or since. Nixon got 17 million more votes than his opponent. Less than 2 years later, he was gone. He was forced to resign. And in his place, an obedient servant of the federal agencies called Gerald Ford took over the White House. How did that happen? Well, it's a long story, but here are the highlights, and they tell you a lot. Richard Nixon believed that elements in the federal bureaucracy were working to undermine the American system of government and had been doing that for a long time. He often said that. He was absolutely right. On June 23, 1972, Nixon met with the then CIA director Richard Helms at the White House. During the conversation, which thankfully was tape recorded, Nixon suggested he knew, quote, who shot John, meaning President John F. Kennedy. Nixon further implied that the CIA was directly involved in Kennedy's assassination, which we now know it was. Helms's telling response? Total silence. But for Nixon, it didn't matter because it was already over. 4 days before, on June 19th, the Washington Post had published the first of many stories about a break-in at the Watergate office building. Unbeknownst to Nixon and unreported by the Washington Post, four of the five burglars worked for the CIA. The first of many dishonest Watergate stories was written by a 29-year-old Metro reporter called Bob Woodward.
Who exactly?
So then he goes into Bob Woodward and alludes to the fact that Bob Woodward came from Naval Intelligence into the Washington Post. And, I mean, we've established this. If you, I mean, the clips that I played of the CIA officers last week telling you that this is what the CIA does, that we work with the media, Operation Mockingbird, we put our people in the media. So Tucker Carlson then goes on to make the case that Bob Woodward and the whole, you know, Washington Post story to take down Richard Nixon was an intelligence operation. I'm not going to go back to the clips of me from last week, but I make this same case that the intelligence community, the deep state, permanent Washington, they are the ones picking and choosing the presidents that they want. They're the ones shaping policy through their misinformation, their disinformation. They're accusing citizens of using disinformation and misinformation, and they're the ones that are using it. And Tucker Carlson is right online here. I was just so blown away by this report because I talked about the fact that if the intelligence community is taking down Joe Biden, it wouldn't be the first time that they took down a president. That they had one president shot in the face on an American street in front of thousands of people. He was shot in the face. That they did that. The CIA. But they also did covert stuff to take down Richard Nixon. They did it to Donald Trump. And these are unelected people, and they should not be choosing who the president of the United States is. Now, I don't agree with everything that Tucker Carlson says here about Nixon. Nixon knew very well who the CIA was, because in the 1950s, Richard Nixon was vice president under Dwight Eisenhower, General Dwight Eisenhower, and during the Eisenhower presidency as vice president, Richard Nixon served as the head of the special operations group of the CIA. Now, if you go back to my last podcast, you remember the CIA McGehee, CIA officer saying that the CIA is not an intelligence gathering operation that gathers intelligence and feeds it to policymakers. He said, no, the CIA is a covert action agency. They do covert operations. Now, what is this special operations group, SOG, that Richard Nixon was the head of in the CIA in the 1950s when they were overthrowing Mossadegh in Iran? When they were overthrowing the legitimate government in Guatemala for Dole or American Fruit Company, when they were overthrowing leaders all over the country, all over the world, shaping policy in these covert actions, Richard Nixon was the head as the vice president under Dwight Eisenhower. He was the head of all that. He knew all of the dirt of the CIA. As a matter of fact, he was going to be the CIA candidate that was going to take over for Eisenhower after Eisenhower was finished serving his second term. This is why Eisenhower gave the farewell address talking about the military-industrial complex and, groups of people who are unelected. This is all in Eisenhower's farewell address. All there. He tells you all about these people. And Richard Nixon is running against John Kennedy in that election in 1960. And Nixon was the CIA candidate. He was the candidate that they were going to bring in. That's why they had Bay of Pigs already to go. They're going to invade Cuba because they had who was the former vice president who oversaw the special operations covert group within the CIA. They had Bay of Pigs already because they're expecting Richard Nixon to win that election, and John Kennedy won. Everyone accuses John Kennedy of stealing that election. It may be true. Who knows? It doesn't matter. He became president of the United States over Richard Nixon. Then he started to assert himself as president. They took him out. They shot him in the face on the streets of Dallas. And then 4 years later, 6 years later, no, 4 years later, no, it would have been 6 years later, I think. It would have been in 68. So Kennedy was shot in 63, so in 68, 5 years later. Nixon runs again for presidency, and then he wins, and then he tries to assert himself the way John Kennedy did and separate from this group that he had already made his bed with. He knew who the CIA was. That's how he knew who killed Kennedy and why he could tell Helms that, I know you guys killed Kennedy. And we know all this stuff because Nixon was recording everything. That's the thing that took Richard Nixon down and why he had to resign, is when the tapes were discovered. If these secret tapes of him recording everything in the Oval Office would have never been discovered, Richard Nixon would have weathered the entire Watergate scandal. It was the fact that these tapes were discovered that actually took, but the reason why Nixon was recording everything is because he understood who these people were, because he knew who killed Kennedy. He worked with these people as vice president in the 1950s. So then they take down Spiro Agnew, who was Nixon's vice president. They take him down in the scandal, and then they go after Nixon, but they force Nixon to pick Gerald Ford as his vice president. And then when Nixon resigns, then Gerald Ford, who sat on the Warren Commission, who is part of this cabal, he becomes president of the United States. No one ever voted for him. And then he chooses Rockefeller to be his vice president. And there's a lot more to this story, but let's listen to Tucker Carlson go more into this.
Bob Woodward. Well, he wasn't a journalist. Bob Woodward had no background whatsoever in the news business. Instead, Bob Woodward came directly from the classified areas of the federal government. Shortly before Watergate, Woodward was a naval officer at the Pentagon. He had a top secret clearance. He worked regularly with the intel agencies. At times, Woodward was even detailed to the Nixon White House, where he interacted with Richard Nixon's top aides. Soon after leaving the Navy, for reasons that have never been clear, Woodward was hired by the most powerful news outlet in Washington and assigned the biggest story in the country. And just to make it crystal clear what was actually happening, Woodward's main source for his Watergate series was the deputy director of the FBI, Mark Felt. And Mark Felt ran, and we're not making this up, the FBI's COINTELPRO program, which was designed to secretly discredit political actors the federal agencies wanted to destroy.
All right, so Mark Felt is Deep Throat. If you watch the movie All the President's Men with Dustin Hoffman, came out a couple of years after Nixon resigned, you'll see how Deep Throat is this, and Deep Throat was his secret code name. He wasn't giving this information to Woodward as himself, as Mark Felt, who was, as Tucker just said, the deputy director of the FBI under Hoover. And he was in charge of the counterintelligence program. That's what COINTEL means. COINTEL Pro, counterintelligence project, is basically disinformation. That's what counterintelligence is. And this guy Felt, the deputy director of the FBI, who was responsible for counterintelligence in the FBI, is the one who's feeding information to Bob Woodward, who is breaking this story, Woodward and Bernstein, at the Washington Post. And he's doing it under this code name, Deep Throat. And we don't find out that this guy that Tucker is talking about, we don't find out that he was actually the deep throat until maybe a year before he died, in like 2005, 2007 is when it's finally confirmed that the deputy director of the FBI who ran the counterintelligence program under Hoover was the source for all this information that was being given to Woodward to take and Bernstein to take down Richard Nixon, the president of the United States. We don't find that out until much later.
Soon after leaving the Navy, for reasons that have never been clear, Woodward was hired by the most powerful news outlet in Washington and assigned the biggest story in the country. And just to make it crystal clear what was actually happening, Woodward's main source for his Watergate series was the deputy director of the FBI, Mark Felt. And Mark Felt ran, and we're not making this up, the FBI's COINTELPRO program, which was designed to secretly discredit political actors the federal agencies wanted to destroy, people like Richard Nixon. And at the same time, those same agencies were also working to take down Nixon's elected vice president, Spiro Agnew. In the fall of 1973, Agnew was indicted for tax evasion and forced to resign. His replacement was a colorless congressman from Grand Rapids called Gerald Ford. What was Ford's qualification for the job? Well, he had served on the Warren Commission, which absolved the CIA of responsibility for President Kennedy's murder. Nixon was strong-armed into accepting Gerald Ford by Democrats in Congress. Quote, "We gave Nixon no choice but Ford," Speaker of the House Carl Albert later boasted. 8 months later, Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission was the president of the United States.
See how he's emphasizing the fact that Gerald Ford sat on the Warren Commission? This is very, very important information because it ties everything together. In all of these dots, if you know this history, they just connect like a puzzle that they force Nixon to take Ford, who sat on the Warren Commission. And then Ford, who else was on the Warren Commission with Gerald Ford? Alan Dulles sat on the Warren Commission. Alan Dulles was the former head of the CIA. Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA in the 50s when Richard Nixon headed the CIA's SOG program. And Alan Dulles's brother, John Foster Dulles, who Dulles Airport is named after, John Foster Dulles was Secretary of State in the Eisenhower administration. And the Dulles brothers, John Foster Dulles, as Secretary of State, was conducting foreign policy for the administration, for the Eisenhower administration, while his brother, Alan Dulles, was performing covert foreign policy from the CIA. That's what the Dulles brothers were doing. And then when Kennedy comes into office, and after the failed Bay of Pigs, he fires Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles was the only director of the CIA at that point. There had never been another director of the CIA at that point. And then Kennedy comes in after Bay of Pigs, and he fires Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles is sitting on the Warren Commission with Gerald Ford. This is why the Warren Commission was 100% bogus. So Gerald Ford comes in. They force Nixon to pick Gerald Ford. Nixon resigns in August. You want to know when the Church Committee started? The Church Committee started in January, just 4 months after Nixon resigns is when the Church Committee started. The Church Committee, if you know, I've explained it to you many times, was formed by Democrat Frank Church to look into the abuses of power of the intelligence community, particularly the CIA. It started just 4 months, 5 months after Nixon resigned. So Gerald Ford becomes the vice president. Again, he picks Rockefeller to be his vice president. First committee starts, and the church committee is explosive in throughout that first year of Gerald Ford's presidency. Gerald Ford, a president that nobody ever voted for. So that's how the first year of his presidency starts, is with this church committee going on exposing the CIA. And this is a new president that is part of the cabal. He sat on the Warren Commission, and he's got to do the cover up. That's why he pardoned Richard Nixon. Everybody was like, well, you know, Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon because, you know, he wanted the country to get over the scandal and for there not to be any more tensions and all the other excuses that he gave. The real excuse for why Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon, because that was part of the cover up, because he didn't want the Democrats to go after him. And what happens in a criminal, investigation into Richard Nixon and a big, you know, criminal case, then they get exposed. The deep state gets exposed in a case like that. So it's just easier for them to just pardon Richard Nixon, make it go away. That's why Ford actually pardoned Richard Nixon. But all through that first year, after Gerald Ford becomes president in August of 1974, all through that next year, you have the church committee, and it's explosive. The CIA, the intelligence community, is being exposed. The director of Central Intelligence, again, William Kobe, he gives up the family jewels, gives up all these secrets. And then in October of 1975, that's when Gerald Ford does the Halloween massacre, and he fires William Kobe, who is the director of Central Intelligence. He fires him in the same night that he fires his chief of staff. He fires the Secretary of Defense. He brings in Rumsfeld. He brings in Liz Cheney's father, Dick Cheney. They're all part of the cabal. Let's listen to a little bit more of Tucker Carlson here, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about this puzzle and how it fits.
What was Ford's qualification for the job? Well, he had served on the Warren Commission, which absolved the CIA of responsibility for President Kennedy's murder. Nixon was strong-armed into accepting Gerald Ford by Democrats in Congress. Quote, "We gave Nixon no choice but Ford," Speaker of the House Carl Albert later boasted. 8 months later, Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission was the President of the United States. See how that works? So those are the facts. Not speculation, all of that actually happened. None of it's secret. Most of it actually is on Wikipedia. But no mainstream news organization has ever told that story. It's so obvious, yet it's intentionally ignored. And as a result, permanent Washington remains in charge of our political system.
There's a lot more to the story. A lot more to the story. And Tucker is right. The media has never laid this story out because, of course, they don't want the American people to connect the dots the way that I'm doing for you and the way Tucker has done for you on his show. Gerald Ford was the establishment president. He came in. The church committee was going on in Congress. William Kobe gave up all the secrets. He fires William Kobe as the director of Central Intelligence. And then Gerald Ford hires George H.W. Bush to replace William Kobe as the director of Central Intelligence. Now, what was George H.W. Bush's experience with intelligence at this time in 1975 that would make him qualified to be the director of Central Intelligence? George H.W. Bush says that he didn't have any involvement with the intelligence community and with the CIA in the 60s. As a matter of fact, when people say that they, and we have pictures of him at Daley Plaza on the day that John Kennedy is assassinated. George Bush is asked where he was on that day, on the day that John Kennedy was assassinated. Everybody in the world knows where they were when they heard John Kennedy was assassinated. George H.W. Bush said that he didn't remember where he was. And we have pictures of him at Daley Plaza. He says he didn't have any affiliation with the CIA back then, even though we have a document from J. Edgar Hoover written about George Bush from the CIA on the day of the Kennedy assassination. Gerald Ford fires William Kobe because William Kobe cooperated with Congress and the Church Committee. And then he puts George Bush as director of Central Intelligence. There were some rumors that Richard Nixon was planning on making George H.W. Bush his vice president. I don't know if this was in 68 or 72, but supposedly Richard Nixon was looking at George H.W. Bush to be his vice president. I do know this. I know that in 1980, in the 1980 election, when Ronald Reagan wins the nomination, on the night that Ronald Reagan accepts the nomination, the Republican convention, the RNC, that year in 1980 was in Detroit, Michigan. Gerald Ford was a congressman from Michigan. Ford, the Ford name is Michigan. He's part of the Ford family. So the convention was in Michigan that year. Ronald Reagan goes into the convention having not announced his vice president. And there was a plan that Gerald Ford was going to be Ronald Reagan's vice president, and they were going to run together as this co-presidency. And then Gerald Ford backs out at the last minute. They aren't able to reach an agreement. And then Ronald Reagan is kind of urged to take George H.W. Bush. And this is how George H.W. Bush becomes vice president. Nobody would even know him, and he wouldn't have any qualifications if he hadn't been placed as director of Central Intelligence by Gerald Ford. You see how all this works together. All these pieces of this puzzle are fitting. But I'm going to play a little bit of Russ Baker. Russ Baker is the author of Family Secrets, and he wrote this book about the Bush family. And he's going to tell you a little story about how Nixon got his start in politics. And it all goes back to Prescott Bush and the Bush family. So you see why Nixon is considering making George H.W. Bush his vice president. And then eventually George H.W. Bush works his way into the Reagan administration. And then you have a Bush dynasty from there. But take a listen, since you may think that Tucker's crazy or I'm crazy doing crazy conspiracy theory stuff. This is author Russ Baker. Take a listen.
So the father was deeply involved in the Vietnam issue right at the same time that his son was ducking out of his service. Nobody has ever, to my knowledge, asked the father about this or what he knew or what he should have known.
When he says the father, he's talking about George H.W. Bush. The son is George W. Bush.
What the father was also doing was he was moving up in politics, and he was moving up very rapidly in the Richard Nixon administration. This is one of the most astounding ascents ever seen. Several interesting things happened. Right after Richard Nixon took office, he arranged a date for his daughter Tricia with George W. Bush and sent a plane paid for by the taxpayers to pick W. up. This is a story that's not terribly well known. But all of these things happened. Poppy Bush, with almost no experience, first-term congressman, he gets on the short list of nominees to be the vice president of the United States with Nixon. Now,
He's talking about where Nixon almost made him vice president. Poppy Bush. Poppy is George H.W. Bush.
gets on the short list of nominees to be the vice president of the United States with Nixon. Now, why would you put him on the ticket? He wasn't a particularly good speaker. He didn't have a really strong constituency anywhere. He was not well established or well known. And yet they put him on the ticket. Then after that, he runs for U.S. Senate. He loses. Nixon names him ambassador to the United Nations. And again, he knew nothing about this. One of his friends asked him, what do you know about this? And he smiled and said, ask me in 2 weeks. After that, 2 years later, at the height of Watergate, they made him the chairman of the Republican Party. Now, you think about this. This is an unusual ascent, to say the least. I wondered what that was about. And that, again, took me another, 6 months of research and down another rabbit's hole. And what I discovered was, just as I had not properly understood the Kennedy assassination, and I might mention, by the way, I had always assumed that Lee Harvey Oswald had been the lone gunman. I really didn't pay any attention to it. Frankly, most journalists know it's a quagmire, and it's just not something, if you want to keep your career on track, that you want to get into. That goes along with flying saucers. And so I never looked into that. But once I just started discovering the footprints of certain people associated with the intelligence community and associated with George H.W. Bush, I did have a reason. And that was the result was those four chapters. The Nixon thing was the same thing. I had always assumed that Nixon was the bad guy in Watergate. It was just excesses and that was it. What I discovered again was that we didn't understand our history. And the way I found out about this was I started seeing Poppy Bush's fingerprints on the Watergate story. What I discovered was that the Watergate burglary was not the signature event of this period. It was one of a series of covert operations that look, when you look at them carefully, to have been deliberately bungled. And they were all deliberately bungled in such a shocking way that really you would have to say that these were carefully thought out about how you could bungle this in such a way as to embarrass Richard M. Nixon. And so this forced me to completely see it in a different light. I've got several chapters on this in trying to understand why Richard Nixon would have even favored the Bushes in the first place. I went all the way back and I discovered, much to my astonishment, that the Bush family appears to have played a role in the creation of Richard Nixon. And again, this is not in any of the Richard Nixon biographies, that back in the 1940s, when Richard Nixon first ran for office, Prescott Bush, the grandfather, who was a senator and very, very close with Wall Street interests, was out in Whittier, and they were looking for a candidate to run against the Democrat there, Jerry Voorhees, but not because, as people said, because Jerry Voorhees was a liberal. The reason they apparently wanted somebody to run against him was because Jerry Voorhees was worried about Wall Street. Does this sound familiar? He was afraid, after the Great Depression, that maybe we needed some more regulation. Maybe maybe Wall Street was out of control. Maybe it was lacked transparency, and it needed more regulation and more oversight. And so Jerry Voorhees was the leading person for oversight of Wall Street and banking, and they took him out with Richard M. Nixon. And so Richard M. Nixon, as best as I'm able to ascertain, was beholden to the Bush family, and this is why he gave them all of these appointments. But once he got in office, he seems to have decided, I'm the president now. The president can do what he wants, and I'm not going to let these people tell me what to do anymore. And I describe in great detail here all of the things he did that angered the oil industry, things he did that angered the military-industrial complex, the things he did that angered big companies of all different types, that angered the CIA. And
they took him out. And they took him out. He thought he was president. He asserted himself just like Kennedy did. They shot Kennedy in the face, and then they destroyed Nixon politically. And all of the pieces to the puzzle, they all fit in. This is just a small part of the story. This is why we're not going to focus on Joe Biden and Mike Pence's documents, because there's a lot more there. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. I'll be back next week.